From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Gelton, and this is On Point. The whack heard round the world. Brutal assault on figure skater Nancy Kerrigan weeks before the 1994 Olympics. It was orchestrated by the ex-husband of her rival, Tonya Harding. The story captivated the nation. So did Tonya. Poor, abused by her mother and her husband. The rags-to-riches story of an ice princess who was anything but. Now a new film re-examines Harding's life. This hour on Point, a big rethink of Tonya Harding. You can join us on air or online. What do you remember about the saga of Tonya and Nancy? Are you ready to see Tonya in a different light? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And in case you need a reminder of that story, here is a refresher, some reminders of what we were talking about 20-some years ago. First, in 1991, at the U.S. Figure Skating Championships in Minneapolis, Tonya Harding made figure skating history. She became the first American woman to land a triple axel in competition. Legendary skating broadcaster Dick Button has the call.
And now the question is whether she will become the first American to attempt and complete a triple axel jump. We will know that here, whether she tries it or not.
That was in 1991, Tonya Harding making that triple axel. Flash forward 3 years later, January 6, 1994, in Detroit, Michigan, an unidentified man smashed Nancy Kerrigan's knee with a baton, keeping her out of the U.S. Figure Skating Championships. Nancy's cries were caught on tape.
Why? Why?
What
I don't know, it's some hard black stick. Something really, really hard.
Something really, really hard. Well, after first denying that she knew anything about that attack on Nancy Kerrigan, Tonya Harding admitted during a press conference 3 weeks later that she'd been less than forthcoming.
I had no prior knowledge of the planned assault on Nancy Kerrigan. I am responsible, however, for failing to report things I learned about the assault when I returned home from nationals. Many of you will be unable to forgive me for that. It will be difficult to forgive myself.
And joining us now from Los Angeles, California, is Craig Gillespie. He's the director of the new movie, I, Tonya, which opened Friday. You can watch the film's trailer at our website, onpointradio.org. Craig Gillespie, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Tom. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you for joining us. And what drew you to this story? More than 20 years have passed. Why did you decide at this point to make this film?
It was interesting. I honestly wasn't necessarily looking to make this film. It was a long time ago, and I'd actually just done two biopics, and one of them was a sports film as well. But when I got the pitch, I was told that Margot Robbie was attached to star as Tonya Harding, and that was such a bizarre, intriguing idea to me. I love Margot's work. I've seen it over the years, that I was immediately fascinated by what that take would be. And then I read the script that Stephen Rogers had written. And it was the most bizarre, dramatic, crazy, comedic, and tragic script I've ever read. And in this amazing way, he's got these conflicting, contradictory interviews with both Tonya and Jeff. He went and met the two of them separately and got their point of view on what happened back then. And they were so contradictory that became his insight to how to tell this story. And we really let the audience participate in exactly what happened.
And you've left the audience sort of wondering what exactly happened, because you certainly don't answer it in this film, do you?
More in the sense of a documentary, I loved that the audience had to actively participate. We're really giving you all the information we have, but then you get to, you know, make an intelligent decision, you know, to that point. But ultimately, it wasn't the thrust of the story for me. What was interesting to me was more of a commentary on how we are as a society, because you know, this was this very iconic event that happened 25 years ago, and she became almost the poster child for the villain in our pop culture, and a punchline, you know, for 25 years now. And I was really fascinated by being able to go back and revisit her and look at her as a person. I mean, she was 22 when this happened. And not to condone what happened at all, but just to maybe have an understanding and an empathy for, like, you know, what she went through and the journey from her childhood to this moment that happened that was so iconic in our culture. And then hopefully from that and the way that the media portrays it, look at the way that we consume that information, because the media really, this was the beginning of a 24-hour news cycle in our country, and when CNN first started, and we just needed content. And so there was this constant, like, appetite to just find out as much stuff as we could and have these headlines. And it was also a time when they dictated the headlines, the media, and they made it very simple.
And, you know, one of the things that struck me, Craig, about this film, and I guess, you know, I wouldn't have been surprised if I had followed figure skating more closely, but talk about a sport that is very individualistic, where it's just the exact opposite of sort of team spirit, isn't it? I mean, it seems like Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding were just opposed from the beginning, and that's part of the structure of figure skating competition.
Well, the thing that I think was the reason that she had so much resistance, because Tonya was such an outsider in the sport. Mm-hmm. Like, the sport is supposed to look effortless and almost has that ballet type quality to it, where it's incredibly physical, incredibly athletic, but it should look like it's poetry. And Tonya's style was not that. She was very aggressive with the style and very physical with it. And was outside of the conventions. She liked to skate to ZZ Top and Wild Thing, and these were conventions that the Skating Federation just wasn't happy with, and it didn't bode well for them.
Yeah. One of the questions I had, Craig, about this film is you have these very realistic, apparent interviews with the characters, with Tonya Harding, with her husband, etc. Were those actually, I mean, they seemed so realistic at the time, and yet they're enacted. I mean, there are actors playing those parts. To what extent were those based on actual interviews with Tonya Harding and her ex-husband, for example?
A lot of that dialogue is from the actual interview. Stephen saw the documentary, Stephen Rogers, the writer on this, of 30-30, going for gold, and was about Tonya Harding, and he was immediately fascinated by it and sort of the search for truth and the role of the media. And so he, on his own dime, tracked down Tonya Harding in Portland and flew up there and sat down for 2 days and interviewed her. And it was such a fascinating interview that then he decided to go and find Jeff Galooly. And the two of them haven't spoken in 25 years. Mm-hmm. And he interviewed Jeff and, you know, found these contradictory points of view. So a lot of their stories are almost verbatim in the film. And then there's embellishments, of course, and then stuff that we've pulled from, you know, interviews over the decades that they've done. So, and then sort of, you know, obviously some dramatic license. But it was astounding to me how much we could go back to either those interviews or moments in history that have been interviewed and find that exact dialogue.
So, Craig, I'm curious. I love the film. I saw it last night. I'm certain it's going to be a big hit. What was your thinking, particularly in the presentation of Tonya Harding? I certainly came away with more sympathy for her than I think those of us who were consumers of the news 20 years ago felt. I mean, she was really portrayed as a bad girl. You portray her in much more sympathetic terms, don't you?
I do only in this, but I try to be honest with it.
Yeah.
I read through the script and we heard Tonya's version of it, and in fact it's also documented. Sorry, excuse me. there was an amazing documentary done by a Yale student when she was 15. And you get to see the emotional abuse and the physical abuse that she went through as a young child and with her marriage that I think formed a lot of obviously who she is as a person and the way that she sees the world. And it makes you understand more that defensiveness that you always felt in her, you know, when you'd see her in these interviews, and that, you know, because she had a very tough upbringing. And part of what you appreciate against all of those odds, she still managed to get to the Olympics twice, you know, coming from a very poor background. And she had this tenacity that you can't help but appreciate.
Yeah.
And I love that about, you know, going on this journey with her. It's like, it wasn't to condone what happened, but just to understand it. And at the time, she was 22, 23 when all this, you know, took place.
Can you hang on for a second? I want to quickly play a cut from the movie. It's a scene in which Tanya Harding, who's played here by Margot Robbie, confronts her mother, Lavanna Golden, played by Allison Janney.
Did you... I mean, when I was a kid, did you ever love me or anything?
You think Sonia Henie's mother loved her? Poor you. I didn't stay home making apple brown Bettys. No, I made you a champion, knowing you'd hate me for it.
That's an outtake from, that's a cut from the new movie, I, Tonya. We've been speaking with the director of the new film, I, Tonya. Craig Gillespie, I'd like you to hold the line for a while, if you could. This movie, I, Tonya, opened last Friday. We're taking a broader look at Tonya Harding's life and legacy. After a break, we'll talk with two sports reporters who covered this story. Here's British singer Cliff Richard with Devil Woman, which is on the I, Tonya soundtrack. I'm Tom Jelton. This is On Point. Looking back at Tonya Harding, two decades after her figure skating career ended in the aftermath of an assault on her rival, Nancy Kerrigan, a new film tells Tonya's stories. You can join the conversation. Has your view of Tonya Harding and what happened changed over the years? Follow us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And one more question now from the director of this new movie, I, Tonya. It's Craig Gillespie. He's with us from Los Angeles, California. So, Craig, finally, what drew you to this story? I mean, many years had passed since the incidents took place. How and why did you decide that more needed to be said?
You know, I loved the opportunity, and it was in Stephen Rogers' script, to take an iconic figure like this that we knew as a villain in our society and re-examine it, and re-examine the role the media had in that, and the role that we had, our relationship with the media, which I thought was sort of more of a commentary that actually holds true for today as well. And this was the birth of that relationship, really, with the 24-hour news cycle.
Right. Well, Craig Gillespie, thanks for joining us. Craig is the director of the 2017 biopic, I, Tonya. You can watch the film's trailer at our website, onpointradio.org. And before we go on, here's another scene from the movie, I, Tonya. Here, Tonya's coach, mother, and ex-husband describe just how difficult it is to land a triple axel.
Most people don't even understand how insanely difficult it is to attempt a triple axel.
You skate backward and then take off from a forward position on your left leg and then somehow...
Hurl yourself blindly 3.5 rotations like you're light as shit, which I'm telling you Tonya never was.
That extra half rotation when you already did three, that made us call Tonya the Charles Barkley of figure skating.
And that's a scene from the new film I, Tonya, about Tonya Harding and her escapade in the 1994 Olympics. And joining me now from Washington is Christine Brennan, national and international sports columnist for USA Today. She covered that Tonya Nancy story and the 1994 Winter Olympics in Lillehammer, Norway for the Washington Post. In fact, she's covered every Olympics dating back to the summer of 1984. She's also the author of Edge of Glory, the inside story of the quest for figure skating's Olympic gold medals, and Inside Edge, a revealing journey into the secret world of figure skating. And Christine Brennan, welcome to On Point again.
Well, Tom, thank you. It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So I think it's fair to say that this story has played an important role in your whole journalistic career, correct?
Tom, I'm probably the only serious journalist who will say this, but Tonya Harding changed my life. If it's not for the whack heard round the world on January 6, 1994, then there ends up being no book because the TV ratings, the 48.5 TV rating, sixth highest rated show, not sports, sixth highest rated show television history in late February when Tanya, Nancy, and everyone else skated in the women's short program in Lillehammer at the Olympics. That rating proved to Scribner that there was interest in a book. The book took off, Inside Edge especially, and became a bestseller and allowed me to have this wonderful career that I've had. So yes, it's with fond memories of all the ridiculousness and craziness of that time, and of course the serious story of course an attack on an athlete. That here we are again.
So as you look back on this story, I certainly remember at the time, you know, there was a kind of a good girl, bad girl aspect to this story. I mean, Nancy Kerrigan was beautiful and well dressed, and Tanya was a little rough edged. Is that kind of Tanya bad, Nancy good story? Was that, do you think, sort of overdone at the time? And does this? I'm curious whether you think this film might sort of correct that perception at all.
You know, that's a great question, Tom. And I do think there were a lot of Johnny-come-latelys to cover this story, because how could there not be? Very few people covered skating. In fact, I had only started really covering it since 1990, the 88 Olympics in Calgary, and then again in 90. So there were very few experts covering the sport back then. And so it was easy to come up with these narratives that a lot of U.S. journalists did as everyone was thrown into the story of our lives. As you've alluded to that with cable news and the fact that, you know, OJ and tragically two dead bodies came along, 4 months later? This is before OJ. And this is, you know, when we have this insatiable appetite for all of this, you know, reality style TV before there is reality TV. And so, there was the image presented in a lot of national media, Tom, that Tanya was the bad one and that Nancy was somehow the good one, and maybe even it morphed into Nancy was rich, the rich one, the elite skater.
Even though she wasn't, right?
No, nothing could be further from the truth. Nancy Kerrigan from Boston was a feisty Boston tomboy who played hockey with her brothers. Her father was a welder. She was definitely blue-collar. And I think part of the problem with the telling of this story, especially from Nancy's point of view, is that we kind of built her up. I was not participating in that part of it, but in general, we in the sports media did build her up to be something she wasn't. And then when she wasn't that, started just bringing her crashing down. Very unfair to Nancy Kerrigan. I think that, so yes, and frankly, they were more alike, Tanya and Nancy, than they were dissimilar, and yet that's something that you really don't read or hear much about.
Christine, let's hear a bit from Tanya Harding. This is from an interview for ESPN's 30 for 30 documentary, The Price of Gold. Here, Tanya describes figure skating as a way to feel safe during her turbulent childhood.
It was just really hard growing up. My skating was definitely my sanctuary. Touch the door, leave your problems behind, go in and just skate.
And that is Tanya Harding speaking in a documentary for ESPN. And so it's not hard. It's not hard, Christine, to feel some sympathy for her. On the other hand, I guess you could also make the argument that hers was somewhat of a wasted talent. Is that right?
Oh, without a doubt. I've made that argument, Tom. Probably we're into triple digits now on that one, talking about this story over the years. Tanya Harding has no one to blame but herself. She was the greatest jumper in U.S. skating history, maybe still is to this day in women's figure skating in the U.S., certainly at the time, at a time when they were getting rid of the compulsory school figures, the painstaking tracings of figure eights, which happened in 1990, and basically putting a premium on one thing, jumping, which is what Tanya did. Born in 1970, comes along at the perfect time to have two Olympics, 1992, and then the Olympic Committee a few years earlier had decided they were going to stagger the Olympics, so they moved the Winter Games not from 96 but to 94. So by luck of birth, anyone born right around the time Tanya was born gets two Olympics.
Mm.
She should have won two Olympic medals. In one case, 92, she leaves her home in Portland and arrives in Albertville, not an easy trip to the French Alps from Portland, Oregon, 3 days before the competition. Just a ridiculous lack of pride, of a sense of where you are, a sense of respect for your sport and for training and being a U.S. Olympian. And says she's not jet lagged, and of course performs poorly, finishes fourth, and then of course admits she was jet lagged. And then, of course, 94 was the fiasco to end all fiascos for Tanya. So I guess what I'm saying is that she's not going to get much sympathy from me. Now, I have seen the movie twice, the screener twice, and the movie does want to make you feel sorry for her.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm happy to say here as a journalist, Tom, and you know me, and we've known each other for a long time, that I don't buy it. And I think that, you know, we need to remember one thing here. There, someone was attacked. And in fact, they wanted to hurt her badly. Luckily, the knuckleheads who attacked Nancy Kerrigan were bad and missed and screwed up. Thankfully for Nancy, the world's most famous bruised knee spurred her onto the greatest performance of her life. But someone was attacked here, and it was Nancy Kerrigan. And you know, I think maybe this is a perfect movie for the Trump era as we look at this again. Interesting movie. But certainly some things that, as a journalist, I would quibble with.
Well, I'm curious about one of those things, Christine. I mean, they present her, the movie presents her mother as an awful, awful woman, and yet she was the one that made it possible for Tanya to do this skating over the years. I mean, she apparently paid for her lessons, right?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I didn't know Lavanna Golden Harding. She had several marriages.
Yeah.
I didn't know her. We were not covering the sport pre-Tanya Nancy as we did post-Tanya Nancy, obviously. So 99% of Tanya's career is pre-Tanya Nancy, or 95% or whatever. So, but we certainly heard some of the stories, and, you know, we'll rely on Tanya for that. And, of course, that's a little sketchy to do that, to rely on Tanya. I like her personally and get a kick out of her, but I certainly would want to get a second source on most things. So, you know, you see a lot of domestic violence in this movie, and I counted the second time around. And her mother hits her. And, of course, Jeff Gulli, her live-in ex-husband, the adjectives in this story were incredible. And so Jeff Gulli hits her, and I'm not making light of this at all. And then Tanya hits back. So I counted, like, I think 20 altogether, Tanya 7 and the other two 13. And so it's jarring. There's a lot of this in that movie, and frankly, I thought a little bit would have gone a long way. But it does then tend to make you sympathetic to Tanya. And these are stories, I don't know if they're true or not. So we'll just rely on Tanya, I guess, saying that they're true. But it's troublesome, yes, but and very troublesome. Domestic violence is horrible. But I also think that there's a lot we don't know about it. And again, I'm not saying yes or no. I just have no idea. But I do know this, that mothers, strong-willed mothers and fathers, but especially moms in figure skating, were behind the success of so many of the great skaters. And by the way, Tanya was a great fritter talent that did not become a great skater, unfortunately,
yeah.
And did not win those medals that she could have won. Clearly, strong-willed parents are part of almost every child's success in the sport of figure skating.
Have you had any contact with her in the intervening years?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I have. In fact, I think I was the only journalist to interview both Tanya and Nancy on the 20th anniversary.
Hmm.
Of the attack, which was now almost 4 years ago, for USA Today, a big cover story on A1, and talked to both of them, and I'm proud of that I've been able to keep a connection with both and the respect of both, even as I've been very critical of Tanya and what she did and how she lived her life and the lack of respect for being an Olympian and for representing the country and taking a spot that could have gone to another skater if she didn't want to pull all the annex that she pulled. Or if she wanted to pull those annex and then let someone else go and not fritter it all away. But yes, I've talked to her and you know, it's funny. It's there's a lot to laugh about with Tanya Harding and also with Nancy Kerrigan, a lot of respect for the way she's lived her life and the quiet class and grace and dignity. We should never lose sight of this movie, you know, does whatever it's going to do. And that's great, and enjoy it, folks, but never forget there was a plan that Sean Eckert and the gang that couldn't shoot straight, they were talking about killing Nancy Kerrigan.
Yeah.
That was reported at the time. So it's a laugh riot, kind of, Tom, but kind of not.
And let's go now to the phones. Catherine is on the line from Detroit, Michigan. Catherine, thanks for calling On Point.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I guess I just have a comment. I was born and raised in Portland, Oregon, and I was about 5 when the whole scandal happened, and I just remember so vividly, well, I remember the scandal vividly, but I remember being such a supporter of Tanya because, you know, as a Portland native, her and me both, you know, I looked like her. And, you know, when little girls, they just idolize these athletes. So I remember, like, really loving her, watching her compete, and she was such a bad chick. You know, she was just so awesome, like, going against all the rules. And then this event happened, and, you know, I was five, so you couldn't process it. But I remember, like, feeling, like, a sense of, like, disgust, but also, like, wow, she's really not messing around, or her family's really not messing around. So I guess I'm just very excited about the film. I've been looking forward to it for a while now, so... Yeah.
Well, and you were not offended by her behavior.
You know, at the, I guess now, like, looking back on it, obviously it wasn't a good choice to make. But the fact that someone would go that far to, you know, want something that big and that much, it's just, it's astonishing, I guess, that that would happen.
Let's get another view now from Stephen, who's on the line from Bristol, Tennessee. Stephen, thanks for calling On Point.
Hello, Tom. I watched skating for many, many years. I knew the difference in a toe jump and a loop jump. And I think this is indicative of how the United States Figure Skating Association reacted to Tanya throughout her career, that she was an outsider. She didn't fit the mold of what they wanted. Nancy Kerrigan, though at home might have been a tomboy, she fit right into the mold of the pretty ice princess that had the right clothes. And I think that it's sad because she really was amazing. Tanya Harding, I think your guest is incredibly skewed with the just listening to the words that she said. Tanya was a great skater. She had a lot of things against her, but she was fourth in the Olympics. That's amazing to be fourth in the Olympics. Could she have won a medal if she would have skated cleanly? Maybe, but we know how judging goes, and now the judging is even less less fair because mm-hmm. we don't know what they're doing. So I think if society looks at this as a message of what are we really doing? What are we? Who are we supporting? And at home, I mean, there's okay. so many things that go into that.
All right. Thank you, Stephen. Christine, go ahead, please,
yeah.
because...
Stephen, I have a question. How was Tanya Harding shafted? What didn't she get that she deserved?
Say that again. I didn't understand.
Yeah, you said she got, you know, shafted. I forget the exact wording you used, Stephen. But that she, you know, got a raw deal, whatever. What was the raw deal? Two Olympic Games. Most people would die for one. Two Olympics, two-time
Yes, she got to go, but did the United States Figure Skating Association embrace her?
Oh, absolutely.
Did they actually attempt to
two-time national champion? Two times? What about this? Again, I guess what you're saying, it's a very common theme. I covered every second of this, so I watched it happen. Tanya was, quote-unquote, the bad girl, but they didn't leave her home.
Right.
They gave her two national titles, took one away, rightly so, for her involvement in the attack on a competitor in 94. But she's still the 91 national champ. Gave her every opportunity, and she frittered it all away. She blew it.
Okay, and Christine, you stayed in touch with her after that as well, so she apparently still talked to you. We are discussing Tanya Harding 20 years after the whack heard around the world. Why are we still so captivated by this story? What does it say about us? Here is ZZ Top with its 1985 single Sleeping Bag, one of the unconventional heavy metal songs Tanya performed while on ice. I'm Tom Jelton. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Tanya Harding and looking back at her life, her rise, her spectacular public fall from grace. You can join our conversation. Has time healed the wounds, softened our perception of Tanya? Is it right to re-examine and re-evaluate her legacy? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And I want to go back now to Christine Brennan, the distinguished sports columnist for USA Today. She's covered more than a dozen Olympic Games, and she reported on the Tanya Nancy saga from start to finish. Christine, that last caller just before the break went out of his way to defend Tanya Harding and sort of criticized you for being too hard on her. There seems to be this kind of sympathy for the underdog sentiment in American society, isn't there? I'm wondering how you react to that.
Oh, absolutely. And what Stephen was saying is what a lot of people say and think, and I think once they see this movie, there's going to even be more people saying that. I'll use a term we've been using a lot lately in journalism, you know, facts are facts. I mean, there's a lot of ways to interpret things that happened in this story, and that's what makes it so rich and entertaining and interesting, horrifying, great, whatever you think. There's a lot to it. It was the weirdest, most bizarre, most amazing story I've ever covered in my career. And when people say, oh, this is like Tanya Harding, this is like Tanya Nancy, I was like, oh, no. Nothing is ever going to be like that. So I get that. But I'm a journalist, and I'm going to say what happened. And again, it is so popular, Tom, for people to say, oh, Tanya got a raw deal. Poor Tanya.
Yeah.
No. We see this all the time in the NFL, NBA, people with great talent who do not use it, who astound us because they just don't practice or they don't train. And, you know, that was Tanya Harding. And that is just, that's a fact. Another great adjective about in the whole Tanya and Nancy saga, Tanya was called a chain-smoking asthmatic. Think about that for a minute, folks. You are given this great talent. You've got the chance, and you do go to 2 Olympic Games. You win 2 national titles, and you're smoking as you're trying to train. And that's a shame because Tanya could have been so much more athletically than she was.
Well, stay with us, Christine. I want to go now to Alice Cook. She is herself a former Olympic figure skater. She represented the United States in the 1976 Winter Olympics, along with her pair skating partner, William Favre. She's also a former sports reporter for Boston television station WBZ. And Alice, you were there.
At the
1994
yes.
Winter Olympics in Lillehammer, Norway. Your thoughts, I mean, you've been sitting here patiently for a while listening to this conversation. Where do your sympathies lie in this story at this point?
Yeah, I kind of feel like I'm the last skater in the flight, you know. I have to wait all this time. I have to say, first of all, that of all the sports events I covered in the 25 years I was at WBZ, Super Bowls and NBA championships, Red Sox winning the World Series, on and on and on. The most fascinating, memorable assignment I was ever given was going to Lillehammer and covering this. And
probably because you're a former figure skater.
Well, I hadn't skated in a long time, though, 76, and then I went to school here in Boston, went to BC, and then I started my career in television. So I was pretty far removed from the sport before I went there. And one thing I have to point out right away, one of the big reasons it made it so fascinating is we were not credentialed. We were the NBC affiliate then. Uh-huh. And CBS, Channel 7, was the affiliate. So they got all the credentials and the rights to go there. And when my news director said, Cookie, we're sending you to Norway, and I said, without credentials? Are you kidding me? How are we going to do this story? We can't get into any events. We can't do the news conferences. And he said, I don't care if you go there and stand in a snowbank for 10 days and talk about Tanya and Nancy. I'll be happy with that. So how it worked out is I did know someone from figure skating, a coach at the Skating Club of Boston. Her name's Ronna Gladstone. She did not have a competitor in those games, but she was very connected. She was an international and national coach. Said, Ronna, come with me. And she made all the difference. Mm-hmm.
And what was your reaction at the time to this very dramatic story? As a former figure skater yourself, but also as a journalist there covering, and Nancy Kerrigan, a hometown girl?
I just could not believe what it did to figure skating. I mean, when you're seeing the story leading the news, network news, every single night, when you're seeing at our own station, we were up in Stoneham every single 6 o'clock news doing live shots. It just brought skating to the forefront. It was very dramatic. It was unbelievable to me. I had friends that were in Detroit and were telling me about being there and everything that went down after that. It was just incredible. It was like something we'd never seen before.
But as a former figure skater, what do you think this story sort of revealed about the world of figure skating?
Well, figure skating is very much insider. It's a niche sport, and it brought sort of the backdoor cattiness and competitiveness to the forefront. What people end up seeing on television is a very graceful product, a very elegant product, But it is cutthroat back there as a competitor. I know from my own experience as a pair skater and training for the Worlds and the Olympics, there is so much that goes on behind the scenes. And what this incident really brought out was, boy, these skaters are fierce.
Mm-hmm. It is a different world from the rest of sports, isn't it? It seems like it's much more individualistic, even selfish. Is that too strong a word?
I don't think that's too strong a word. You know, you make an Olympic team or you make a world team, but there's nothing team about it. Everyone there is competing against each other. You might be wearing the same uniform during opening ceremonies, but in the end, it's man against man, and it's really not a team sport at all. And the coaches squabble, and there's so much judging behind the scenes going on. It's just a different world, and it's a world that most people don't understand or don't get to see that side of.
Let's go now to Rosemary, who's on the line from Baltimore, Maryland. Rosemary, your thoughts on the Tonya Harding story?
Well, hi. I am a former mental health nurse, and I believe that Tonya Harding did a lot of self-destruction in figure skating, and I believe it comes from her dysfunctional background and also probably some abuse herself during her formative years. So I think that has a lot to do with outcomes as we go through life if we don't realize that that had an impact on, my personality, for my personhood, I mean.
What do you think about
that? That's all I had to say about that.
Fine. Well, thanks for calling, Rosemary. Alice, what's your reaction to that? And in part, as a former figure skater yourself, what's the impact of all this training discipline on you?
It doesn't make you normal, that's for sure. You're dealing with people that spend up to, 6 hours in an ice rink every day with the same people. You're almost in a bubble. There isn't... A lot of times, skaters don't even go to – they take correspondence courses instead of going to high school. So you're really in this very small competitive world, and it's very hard day in and day out. And, we talk about these skating mothers, and every skater out there had a skating mother. I'm lucky that mine was not abusive, but I remember my relationship with my mother, and I did want to please her because I knew how much she was sacrificing. She was a single mom, secretary. She never made me feel bad about that, and she had to take out a lot of loans. But there's a big weight that a lot of skaters carry because of the expense of the sport and how much you have to put into it.
Well, how did you react to this kind of good girl, bad girl presentation of the Nancy Tonya story at the time, knowing, withdrawing on your own experience?
There are a lot of good girls and bad girls in figure skating. That's how I can just sum it up. I have a funny story about that, about a reaction from our sports department. Our esteemed producer, Alan Miller, at the time, he didn't even call figure skating a sport. He said, Alice, I'm sorry, I know it's athletic and everything. It's not a sport. And when the whack heard round of world happened, he said, well, Alice, I think I like figure skating a lot more now that it's a contact sport. So you're getting a lot of that, it's like, okay, this is a drama. And, I think a lot of sports fans were kind of into the Tonya angle, the bad girl thing, because it just spiced it up.
Mm-hmm. And Christine Brennan, back to you. Do you feel that there was too much sort of good girl, bad girl presentation of the story back in 1994?
Well, I think Alice is right, and it's good to be on with you, Alice. All these years, it's been a long time, and great respect for you and your career and what you've done. And I think it was easy, right, to explain it that way. Alice makes a great point about a lot of people who had no idea what skating was like, and then, hey, this is cool, which explains the 48.5 TV rating. Hmm. I mean, I think it's important for folks to understand, as I said earlier, sixth highest rated show in television history. Number one is The Last Mash. Number two is Dallas, Who Shot JR, that episode. Three is an episode of Roots. Four and five are Super Bowls involving Joe Montana. And number six is Nancy Tonya short program in Lillehammer for all time, because now the Super Bowl get a 40 rating,
yeah.
48.5. More TVs now, but in terms of percentage of televisions at the time. So people tuned in because it was really easy to digest. And I think there was also, I don't know what you think about this, Alice, but the element of sexism. There was a sense, shocking, mm-hmm. even in today's world, right? But the notion that, they're pretty, they're graceful, they're beautiful on ice, Peggy Fleming, Dorothy Hamill, et cetera, Janet Lynn. So, oh, they can't be competitive, can they? They can't want this. Well, of course they do. I've often said, Tom, that if for World War III or Tiddlywinks, I want Katharina Witt on my side. And Alice, you know her. And,
yes.
You know, you can have the Patriots offensive line, Alice.
Thanks a lot.
Vitt, and I'll win with Katharina Witt. So I think part of it was we had such a view of this dainty, beautiful Broadway show tune classical music sport that was completely wrong. So it opened everyone's eyes to it, and literally leading the network news, all the networks, night after night. I was on A1 of the Washington Post more than I'd ever been in my life, the story to end all stories in sports. But I think part of it was because of, you know, bad girl, good girl, and just the lack of any knowledge of the sport until it crash-landed right upon us.
So, Alice, tell us a little bit. I'm sure that you know Nancy Kerrigan as a local girl. You know, there is this image of her that we've had all this time as a really glamorous figure, and yet she came from a largely working class background, and actually many figure skaters do, right?
They do. Christine just mentioned a few of them, but Peggy Fleming, Janet Lynn, Dorothy Hamill, Michelle Kwan, they are not from wealthy families. Why those skaters got to where they were in the international skating world is because they were athletic, they were fighters, they had a team behind them, coaches, parents, a support group, but they had nothing handed to them. And you talk about Nancy, you know, playing hockey with her brothers, and her father was a welder. She didn't come from money. She wore the Vera Wang dress, of course, the $5,000 dress for the dollar dress for the Olympics. But, you know, she had sponsors that paid for that. She came from very common means, and a lot of skaters do. It's the athleticism and the fight, and I think a lot of times these skaters from middle class do make it because they are fighters. They're really fighting an uphill battle.
Interesting. Let's go now to Andrea. She's on the line from Plainfield, Vermont. Andrea, thanks for calling On Point.
Yes, thank you for giving me a short little chance. I'm a teacher and a parent of four adult children, and I became a teacher in Germany, a phys ed teacher and science teacher, and then taught in South America and eventually also North America, and stayed here because I found the society so extremely child-supportive and child-loving, family-supportive, uh-huh. child-loving, in contrast to the more urban societies I had lived in before.
And how do you react to this film?
I was horrified. I haven't seen the film.
Or the story, I should say.
And I am not eager to see the film. I know that we have a whole lot more income gap in America than in anywhere Europe. So that means poor families really struggle so much harder. And I happen to know this because my youngest daughter, now 25, has autism and epilepsy. And a child with disability puts also the parent's life really in a disabled state most often. So when one all of a sudden lives on a tight budget, there's a whole lot more difficulty to deal with. And I do feel sympathetic for so many young people. I've worked also in special ed schools here. But there has to be much more moral education and rehabilitation for these youngsters okay. in schools, outside of schools, in centers for after-school services, and also, naturally, in prisons.
Yeah.
It is unheard of that young kids get tried off anywhere in civilized societies as adults just because the crime was so bad.
Okay.
Or that somebody like Tanya Harding would end up in prison, for example. She needs rehabilitation. We all know this.
Okay. And thank you, Andrea. Thank you very much. Alice, your thoughts on that, you know, in terms of what sort of lessons we draw from this kind of moral story here?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, you can't paint figure skating or any sport with a broad brush, obviously. And I think that figure skating, until this happened, was just this pretty girl sport, mm-hmm. and it was all sequins and glitz and beautiful to watch. What comes out of it is there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, and there's a lot of competition. It never went to the level of someone being physically assaulted, as far as we know, but it's there. It's there in this beautiful sport of figure skating. It's in every sport.
And, there's some brutality there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's Alice Cook. She is herself an Olympic figure skater, a former figure skater, former sports reporter at WBZ-TV. Thanks so much for coming in and joining us in the studio.
Thank you.
And we were also joined by Christine Brennan, the distinguished national and international sports columnist for USA Today. Christine, thank you. We appreciate your time.
Tom, my pleasure. Thank you.
You bet. You can continue this conversation, and you can get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Sufjan Stevens just released a new song called Tonya Harding. He considers it a tribute to the woman he calls his shining American star and a delightful disaster. I'm Tom Gelton. This is On Point. So full of surprises. Are your laces untied? What's the frown on your face for? And just what are the skates for now? Tell me which is your good side.